Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by your CFRC News Collective, Ara McCauley, Jesse Bell, and Jenny Hinch. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcasts, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Ara McCauley, and here are your local news headlines. February 14th is Pride Week in the city, and Kingston Pride is celebrating with a variety of activities centered around their 2026 theme of resilience and liberation in action. In addition to programming from song circles, board game nights, drag bingo, queeryoke, a parade, and community fair, the Kingston Pride Board has been hard at work developing committees to make events more accessible to all members of the community. CFRC spoke with Emily Seshik, Vice Chair of Kingston Pride's Board of Directors.
I am the Vice Chair for Kingston Pride this year, so I help run the community fair. But on top of that, the more meaningful work that I do is the accessibility side of things, so making sure that folks can access the entirety of Pride.
And do you want to talk a little bit about what Kingston Pride is and sort of what it contributes to the month of June in Kingston?
So Kingston Pride actually started in 1989 with an informal little walk down Princess Street. And we kind of view that as our first official Pride March. And a lot of the groundwork was done by informal networks like the Queen's Homophile Association and folks like that. And so modern day Kingston Pride reflects a lot of those values right back, which is a little different than other bigger prides, perhaps. So we focus a lot on what the community needs and wants versus what the corporations would like us to do. So we've been really trying hard to expand beyond the community fair and the parade. So we actually are hosting 3 different workshops this year, all at the library, which is super exciting. And we're inviting local artists and local performers to come teach their skills to queer folk. And we also are doing more community-centered events like our Get Together, Get Ready event that is hosted at the library, where people are going to be making posters. We're going to have the cricket running in the makerspace so folks can get shirts and buttons, and we're even doing some letter writing campaigning there. So kind of like an all-in-one stop with a bunch of really cool people too.
I wonder if you could talk about the theme of this year's Pride. Has there always been a theme?
It's been within the last few years that we've really started introducing a theme, and we try really hard to think about that theme in everything we do. So this year, our theme is resilience and liberation in action. And so with that understanding, we have been using that framework to choose our performers, to choose our parade marshal, to choose who's even vending at the fair. And I think that's really something special because I think it reflects the community a lot better than the corporate rainbow capitalism prides. But we really do use that as a framework.
I wonder if we could talk a little bit about accessibility. Kingston's not always the easiest city to navigate, and what kind of activities Kingston Pride is doing to accommodate and improve that.
As someone who is disabled themselves, I use mobility aids and I'm also neurodivergent. I found that in previous years, a lot of Pride was not accessible to me. And the more I started talking to people around me, the more I was realizing I wasn't the only one. Even with like being a person of color, there was a void, a space that needed to be filled. And I just naturally kind of fell into it. When I first joined, we were a very small board. I think we only had 5 folks, and I was the only disabled one. And it actually started with one of our events that was being run that I was running, that I found out I couldn't access. As the event organizer, I could not access that event. And that's when it really hit home for me. And so now I ensure that accessibility is at the forefront of what we do. It's not an afterthought. It's something that we're thinking of first and foremost. In our Pride Guide, I try to highlight all those accessible needs beyond just the ramp as well. Try to highlight like terrain needs and is there staircases? Are there people there that can help you? Is there loud music being amplified? Mm-hmm. Because I think too often we think of accessibility as a ramp.
Right.
And that's it.
It seems like in the last couple of years, Kingston Pride as an organization has done a lot of work to take a deeper dive into who they are serving and how to do so.
Before I joined the board, it tended to be a lot of white cis folks. And in reality, that's just not what the population is like. And I think that by adding on more committees, we're able to get a better understanding of what the community is actually saying and needing. Because like at the end of the day, 9 people cannot represent hundreds of queers.
Why do you think that Pride matters now in 2026?
I think it matters because there are still people in the world that think that being queer or being trans or being different in any way makes them unworthy of love and affection and care. And Pride does this amazing job of creating a community, even just day of, like there's all of a sudden this community all around and you're realizing I'm not so alone. There are people like me. There are people that I can connect with. There are opportunities for me to succeed in life and be fulfilled and not have to hide who I am. But I also think that a lot of queer people, we do a lot of mutual aid and community work year round. And I think that that can be a little tiring over time, just that continuous wave of the world kind of sucks and we're trying to do our best, but we don't know how. And Pride, at least for me, it gives me back some energy for the next year ahead, so that I can keep doing the work that I do.
How do people sign up to volunteer, find out what opportunities are available?
So we have our links on our social medias, which is at Kingston Pride. And then on top of that, our website, which is just www.kingstonpride.ca. All of the information gets posted on those places. All of our socials are at kingston.pride. And on our website at www.kingstonpride.com.
Our Livable Solutions is facing a fast approaching deadline to provide the city of Kingston with a comprehensive plan for the proposed Crossroad Village Cabin community by June 30th. The group is calling on community leaders, funders, businesses, and residents to help secure the future of Crossroads Village, which they describe as an innovative housing initiative designed by and for people experiencing homelessness. While our Livable Solutions OLS has already secured a $1 per year 10-year lease for the land behind Crossroads United Church at 690 Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard and has engaged with a professional engineer to prepare documents for building permits, they still need to prove to the city that they have enough money on hand to fund the project for its first 2 years. CFRC sat down with OLS's Acting Executive Director Krista Wilson, Board Director Christine Bedard, and Jan English, an alumni of the Sleeping Cabin Pilot Project, which operated seasonally at Portsmouth Olympic Harbor and Center 70 between January 2022 and September 2024.
Crossroads Village is a concept that was developed out of two and a bit year pilot project, the Sleeping Cabin Pilot Project, that was based seasonally between Portsmouth Olympic Harbor and Center 70 between 2022 and 2024. So it's an 18 cabin community. We vetted out the concept of it with the Sleeping Cabin Pilot Project, and it's to be located behind Crossroads United Church at 690 Sir John A. Boulevard.
Where are we now with it, and where are you hoping to go, or where do you need to get? Because you do have a deadline coming up of June 30th.
We do. Yeah. So the City of Kingston retained ownership over the cabins that were used for the pilot project. There's 17 cabins sitting in storage somewhere. We don't know where. And we came to an agreement that our Livable Solutions could acquire ownership over the cabins for $1. And also the city would assist with $500,000 allotment to be able to build out the site, pay for the common building and pay for infrastructure. But OLS needs to raise $1 million, which reflects 2 years operating costs to be able to go through with that deal with the city. We can raise about $150,000 a year ourselves. So we're really trying to raise $350,000 times 2 years. So how can we raise that in a way that's sustainable as well? We do have a deadline of June 30th. And if we hit that deadline and don't raise the $1 million, we don't have to have $1 million in our bank account, but we have to have proof that we have the 2 years operating funds. Then the city has the right to sell the cabins.
OLS argues that the Crossroads Village Cabin community fosters independence and prepares residents for permanent housing, something Jan English can affirm. Do you think it was the cabin program that allowed you to find housing?
Definitely. Yeah. I wouldn't have found it without it. I honestly, when I was out on the street, thought I would never be housed again. After 4 years, it had been a long winter. I had spent it in a tent on the ice, and I was done. I was just done. It's like having a family that you didn't know you had. It's a community. When somebody has something bad happen, everyone helps. And it was like 18 people I didn't know, I'd never met, And within days, you're checking on each other. And, like, I truly miss it now that I'm housed. The staff that are there, they don't hound you about things. If you need assistance or you have a question, you ask them, they find out. If they don't know, they get on the phone and they'd find out for you. And anything that you want to try to do to better yourself, they'll find a way to get it. If it's a course or a tutor or whatever it is, they help you move ahead and get your life back.
While there are conflicting reports on why the original pilot folded, Wilson suspects costing was a concern. According to costs obtained by OLS through Ontario's Municipal Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, MFIPPA, or MFIPA, the pilot was delivered at a total cost of approximately $1.18 million, including the purchase of the cabins, site infrastructure, operating expenses, staffing support, insurance, and the seasonal relocation of the cabins between sites.
Were you given a reason?
Officially, no. We had heard some things about how much the program cost, and that was very confusing to us because the amount of money we were receiving was under what we needed. We were scraping. We didn't have a paid management position. We had, you know, 12 staff and 17 residents and no paid manager. We were really scraping every penny that we did receive. Provincial dollars that came through the city went to pay staff. And we weren't charitable yet, so fundraising was difficult. But the fundraising that did happen paid for the extra things that needed. But we really scraped through in our budget. And we knew, you know, I'm a project manager. I can look at another initiative and go, okay, I can kind of figure out how much that might cost, right? And so what the public was told was that it was the most expensive program in the city. That was very confusing to us. You know, part of the expenses that we have 24-hour staff, we don't staff with cameras. You can't staff with cameras. You can't mitigate risk with cameras, and you cannot have good conversations with cameras. We staff with people, real people who've been there. And so that, you know, adds a little bit of cost, but, you know, not extraordinary. And so we had asked for the finances at that time and received a list that didn't make a lot of sense to us. We did eventually do a Freedom of Information request and received the list of corporations or businesses that had been paid under the program, including the City of Kingston, which included the moves, because the cost of the moves seemed, we were confused by what was being reported as the cost of the moves, because I was there for every one of them. The moves were 3 days of no sleep for me to make sure that it happened and happened well. And the list we received, the total cost of the program was $1.175 million. There was things on the list we don't understand, like a payment to an RV company for $25,000. We don't know what that was. But, you know, in reality, we know that's one of the cheapest programs in the city.
Wilson estimates that the annual operating cost of the proposed Crossroad Village is approximately $500,000, about $76 per person per night, which covers not only housing, but staffing, programming, and peer-led supports. By comparison, Wilson notes that the Sydenham Road Emergency Center is reported to exceed $160 per person per night.
And so for Crossroads Village, we used our budget for the pilot project to figure out what it would cost, and it works out to $76 a night per person. But it's hard to compare because there's not good transparency and accountability in the system. So we've been looking at other cabin communities in other cities. We've helped a number of other cities launch their cabin communities, and their budgets are astronomical compared to what we've figured out. We're looking at every other cabin community is well above $100 a night per person, and most of them are like in the 140 range. And so we're like, we're curious why there's such a difference, but we know we've got a good program and a low-cost solution for taxpayers. And then recently there was an article in the Whig Standard which outlined the operating expenses of the newest shelter on Sydenham Road. So then we finally had something to compare to. And that shelter works out to $168 a night per person. So, you know, that tells us that we're on the right track. You know, we're saving taxpayers' money by creating a program that's inexpensive, but also creating a program with people with lived experience that they want.
While the group works to secure the funds required to proceed with the project by June 30th, OLS is also calling on the community to provide ideas to keep the project sustainable through social enterprise and revenue-generating ideas, leads on sponsors and partnerships, and the identification of funding opportunities.
You made a unique call in your press release, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and what you're looking for, who you're looking for, and how people can reach out to you.
Thank you. So we're looking for people who can help with ideas. We're very interested in social enterprise ideas that could create funding and also jobs. We are working on one that hopefully will work out, but it won't be ready before June 30th. But especially, you know, to get out of this granting donation cycle, if we can generate our own income, that would be great. So people who might have ideas around that, we're currently looking for a building. If there's a, you know, charitable landlord out there. And we're just looking for people who might want to pitch in and help us figure out how to get the cabin community funded and Crossroads Village funded. June 30th is a tight deadline.
Shout Sister Choir, longtime supporters of Crossroads Village and OLS's mission, will host a fundraising concert on June 16th at 7 p.m. at Crossroads United Church. The concert represents an opportunity for residents to learn more about Crossroads Village and tour the 18th cabin, which is on display at the site.
And we have a fundraising event coming up, do we not, Crystal?
Oh, we do. Shout Sister Choir, who've been amazing, amazing supporting us. Janice Milkalpine, Georgette Fry have been amazing supporting Crossroads Village. We actually have a plan for a kitchen party with Shout Sister Choir once Crossroads actually gets opened, which will be super fun. But they have offered a fundraising concert for us June 16th at 7 p.m. and it's at Crossroads United Church at 690 Sir John A. Boulevard. We will have, thanks to the Davies Foundation and some community donors, we managed to purchase the 18th cabin. So we have it in a trailer and we'll be taking you around the community, but it will be at Crossroads for the Shout Sister Choir concert. So people can come take a look at the cabin. So everybody's welcome to attend. The tickets are at the door. Contribute what you feel it's worth. We don't set ticket price. And just come have fun.
All this learning that I've been doing and moving forward in my own life, I can't wait for the cabins to open back up so I can come back to the cabin. Even if I'm there volunteering, I would still be bringing program to the cabin community to help people there, you know? Mm-hmm. And because I have lived experience, they love having me there.
It's hard. You need a light at the end of your tunnel. You need something to work towards or to be engaged about, because if you don't, you lose hope out there quickly. So when you see people that have been there and that they're housed now and they're succeeding and everything is going well, you believe it can happen and it gives you hope to hang on to. And that's important. Out there, there's not a lot to hang on to.
Please just come out and help to come donate, come help us out, come volunteer. Come to the Shout Sister Choir on the 16th of June and just help us get this project going. It's a good initiative and we need to have the cabins back in Kingston.
For more information about Crossroads Village or to discuss partnership opportunities, please contact info@ourlivable.solutions. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jesse Bell with your CFRC Sports Desk.
This is Jesse Bell with your sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. We begin with the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, and the Carolina Hurricanes have evened their Stanley Cup Championship Series at two games apiece following a decisive 5-3 regulation road victory over the Vegas Golden Knights. Regulation wins have been hard to come by in this series. This is the first for either team since Game 1, with Game 2 being decided in a single overtime frame, and Game 3 an epic 2-overtime thriller won by Vegas. Game 5 is scheduled for Thursday night in Carolina. We shift our focus now to the NBA, and on Monday night, the San Antonio Spurs, led by Victor Wembanyama, tallied their first victory in the NBA's championship series with a 115-111 road victory over the New York Knicks. New York is still in control of the series with a narrow 2-1 lead. But we have a decisive Game 4 scheduled for tonight at Madison Square Garden with an 8:30 p.m. tip-off. We'll conclude today's sports report by looking at the international soccer world. The Canadian women's national team dominated their international friendly against Croatia, winning 6-0. The men's national team looks to replicate that success in their World Cup opener on Friday, June 12th, as they take on Bosnia and Herzegovina in Toronto with a 3 p.m. scheduled kickoff. This concludes your sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. Thanks for listening, folks, and get ready to enjoy some fantastic World Cup action. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, June 10th, 27 is your high with a 40% chance of rain, dropping down to a 30% chance of precipitation overnight and a low of 17. Thursday, June 11th, another hot day, the start of a run of warm weather. 29 is your high with a 30% chance of rain, only going down to 22 overnight, so it's going to be quite warm even overnight here in the city of Kingston. Friday, June 12th, 29 degrees is your high with a 30% chance of rain, dropping down to 16 degrees and cloudy overnight. Saturday, June 13th,
Just in time for Pride here in the city of Kingston, we have got a beautiful 27 degree day with a mix of sun and cloud. Sunday, June 14th. There is a 40% chance of rain in the forecast with a high of 26. And then kicking off next week, Monday, June 15th, 27 is your high with a 45% chance of rain. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. On Bath Road between Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard and Portsmouth Avenue, expect delays as crews continue installing intersection pedestrian signals. Over on King Street from Country Club Drive to Front Road, expect delays as Utilities Kingston work has reduced traffic to one lane each direction. Watch for lane shifts, reduced speeds, and shared lane signage. Cranbrook Street from Days Road to Lakeview Avenue will be closed from 8:40 to 9:20 a.m. in the morning and 3:20 to 3:50 p.m. in the afternoon as part of the School Streets program, restricting access during school drop-off and pickup times. Wright Crescent remains closed between Palace Road and Kingsland Crescent for roadway repairs and safety improvements. Construction continues on Princess Street from Frontenac to Division as part of a major reconstruction project. Long-term closures remain in place on Aberdeen Street between Johnson and William and Barry and Queen. And Sydenham Street is closed to through traffic between Princess and Queen for the Sydenham Street Community Space. On-street parking on Sydenham Street does, however, remain available.
Hello, Kingston, and welcome back to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario, I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Jenny. And this is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you by Flying V Productions. Whether you're looking for live music, pride celebrations, community festivals, workshop theaters, or just something fun to do around the city, there's plenty happening this week, so let's get into it. On Wednesday, community events take center stage. Teens can head to Rideau Heights Branch for games and grub in the afternoon, while Kingston Nexus hosts a board game night beginning at 6 p.m. The Ground Up Dance Festival arrives at the Theatre La Sesame at 7 p.m. and showcasing contemporary dance and performances from across the region. Live music highlights include Glenn Jones, Liam Grant, and Jack Pine performing at Something Else Records, while Dan Byrne and Orit Shimoni take the stage at the Broom Factory later that evening. Thursday definitely keeps things busy with the Kingston Public Market running all day in Springer Market Square. The Central Branch Library hosts a Get Ready for Pride workshop, while Calvin Park Branch presents Roots and Remedies, exploring Indigenous teachings and traditions. In the evening, Drag Bingo returns to Daff Brewing from 7 to 11 p.m. Live music includes Mallory Chipman at the Cove Inn, Ted Lalonde at Timeout Bar, and KBS Monthly Jam at the RCHA Club. Friday is packed with entertainment across the city. Yuzuki Cafe hosts its live drag and burlesque from 5 to 7 p.m., while The Spire welcomes Canadian comedy and musical favorites The Arrogant Worms for a concert and music talk beginning at 7. Live music includes Orchestra Criminal at Hotel Wolf Island, Morgan Davis at the RCHA Club, and local favorite Squid Pistol performing at the Merchant Tap House later that night. Saturday is heading into Pride Weekend in Kingston. The community fair runs at Confederation Park from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., while Kingston Pride Parade begins at noon at the Memorial Center. Other highlights include YGK Beer Fest at Fort Henry, the Ukraine Folklore Festival at Ragey, and an Ontario Serendipity Tour documentary screening at the Tet Center. In the evening, visitors can hop aboard the Out on the Queen Pride boat cruise, catch comedian Jeff McHenry and at Daff Brewing, or dance the night away at Glow After Dark at La Vida Bistro and the Gay Pride Dance Party at Bottoms Up. Wrapping things up on Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market runs from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. The Kingston Pride Recovery Brunch takes place at Wharf and Feather beginning at noon, and nature lovers can join a guided walk with KNCLN starting at 10:30 a.m. Live music includes Hawksley Workmen and the Wolves at Signal Brewery, followed by Head Over Heels performing at the Cove Inn's waterside patio. This has been your weekly events and concerts calendar for June 8th through the 14th. And for more information on any of these events, visit the CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This event's calendar is brought to you by Flying V Productions, bringing live theater, comedy, and unforgettable entertainment to audiences across Kingston. Be sure to check out their upcoming shows and events throughout the season. I'm Jenny, and thanks so much for listening, and have a great week, Kingston!
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcast, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.